Chapter 135. Enough to reach anybody's ears. The Eagles then patronized Mrs. Rodin, took her to live with her at her own house at Paris, quarreled with the ambassador's wife, because she would not receive her protege, and did all that lay in woman's power to keep Becky straight in the paths of virtue and good repute. Becky was very respectable and orderly at first, but the life of humdrum virtue grew utterly tedious to her before long. It was the same routine every day, the same dullness and comfort, the same drive over the same stupid boys to Bowlin, the same company of an evening, the same Blair sermon of a Sunday night, the same opera always being acted over and over again. Becky was dying of weariness, when, luckily for her, young Mr. Eagles came from Cambridge, and his mother, seeing the impression which her little friend made upon him, straightway gave Becky warning. Then she tried keeping house with a female friend. Then the double meanage began to quarrel and get into debt. Then she determined upon a boarding house existence, and lived for some time at that famous mansion kept by Madame de Saint-Amour, in the Rue Royale, at Paris, where she began exercising her graces and fascinations upon the shabby dandies and fly-blown beauties who frequented her landlady's salons. Becky loved society, and, indeed, could no more exist without it than an opium eater without his dram, and she was happy enough at the period of her boarding house life. "He women here are as amusing as those in Mayfair," she told an old London friend who met her, "only, their dresses are not quite so fresh. The men wear clean gloves, and are sad rogues, certainly, but they are not worse than Jack this and Tom that. The mistress of the house is a little vulgar, but I don't think she is so vulgar as Lady," and here she named the name of a great leader of fashion, "that I would die rather than reveal. In fact, when you saw Madame de Saint-Amour's rooms lighted up of a night, men with plaques and cordons at the eager tables, and the women at a little distance, you might fancy yourself for a while in good society, and that Madame was a real countess. Many people did so fancy, and Becky was for a while one of the most dashing ladies of the Countess's salons. But it is probable that her old creditors of 1815 found her out, and caused her to leave Paris, for the poor little woman was forced to fly from the city rather suddenly, and went thence to Brussels. How well she remembered the place! She grinned as she looked up at the little entresol which S.E. had occupied, and thought of the barrister's family, bawling for horses and flight, as their carriage stood in the porte-cochere of the hotel. She went to Waterloo and to Lincoln, where George Osborne's monument much struck her. She made a little sketch of it. "Hat poor Cupid," she said. "How dreadfully he was in love with me, and what a fool he was. I wonder whether little Emmy is alive. It was a good little creature, and that fat brother of hers. I have his funny fat picture still among my papers. They were kind, simple people." At Brussels, Becky arrived, recommended by Madame de Saint-Amour to her friend, Madame la Comtesse de Borodino, widow of Napoleon's general, the famous Count de Borodino, who was left with no resource by the deceased hero, but that of a table d'hôte and an eager table. Second-rate dandies and rowers, widow ladies who always have a lawsuit, and very simple English folks, who fancy they see continental society at these houses, put down their money, or ate their meals, at Madame de Borodino's tables. The gallant young fellows treated the company round to champagne at the table d'hôte, rode out with the women, or hired horses on country excursions, clubbed money to take boxes at the play or the opera, betted over the fair shoulders of the ladies at the eager tables, and wrote home to their parents in Devonshire about their felicitous introduction to foreign society. Here, as at Paris, Becky was a boarding-house queen, and ruled in select pensions. She never refused the champagne, or the bouquets, or the drives into the country, or the private boxes, but what she preferred was the eager at night, and she played audaciously. First she played only for a little, then for 5-franc pieces, then for Napoleon's, then for notes. Then she would not be able to pay her month's pension. Then she borrowed from the young gentleman. Then she got into cash again, and bullied Madame de Borodino, whom as he had coaxed and wheedled before. Then she was playing for 10 sous at a time, and in a dire state of poverty. Then her quarter's allowance would come in, and she would pay off Madame de Borodino's score, and would once more take the cards against Monsieur de Rossignol, or the Chevalier de Raff. When Becky left Brussels, the sad truth is that she owed 3 months' pension to Madame de Borodino, of which fact, and of the gambling, and of the drinking, and of the going down on her knees to the Reverend Mr. Muff, Minister Anglican, and borrowing money of him, and of her coaxing and flirting with Myler Noodle, son of Sir Noodle, pupil of the Rev. Mr. Muff, whom she used to take into her private room, and of whom she won large sums at Eckert, of which fact, I say, and of 100 of her other knaveries, the Countess de Borodino informs every English person who stops at her establishment, and announces that Madame Rawdon was no better than a vipier. So our little wanderer went about setting up her tent in various cities of Europe, as restless as Ulysses or Bamfold Moore Carew. Her taste for disrespectability grew more and more remarkable. She became a perfect bohemian year-long, herding with people whom it would make your hair stand on end to meet. There is no town of any mark in Europe, but it has its little colony of English raftsmen whose names Mr. Hemp the officer reads out periodically at the sheriff's court, young gentlemen of very good family often, only that the latter disowns them. Frequenters of billiard rooms and estaminets, patrons of foreign races and gaming tables. They people the debtors' prisons they drink, and swagger they fight, and brawl they run away without paying. They have duels with French and German officers. They cheat Mr. Spoonie at Eckert. They get the money and drive off to Baden in magnificent britskas. They try their infallible martingale and lurk about the tables with empty pockets, shabby bullies, penniless bucks, until they can swindle a Jew banker with a sham bill of exchange, or find another Mr. Spoonie to rob. The alternations of splendor and misery which these people undergo are very queer to view. Their life must be one of great excitement. Becky, must it be owned, took to this life, and took to it not unkindly. She went about from town to town among these bohemians. The lucky Mrs. Rawdon was known at every play table in Germany. She and Madame de Crucicassi kept house at Florence together. It is said she was ordered out of Munich, and my friend Mr. Frederick Pigeon avers that it was at her house at Lausanne that he was hawkest at supper, and lost £800 to Major Loder and the Honorable Mr. Deuces. We are bound, you see, to give some account of Becky's biography, but of this part, the less, perhaps, that is said the better. They say that, when Mrs. Crawley was particularly down on her luck, she gave concerts and lessons in music here and there. There was a Madame de Rawdon, who certainly had a matinee musicale at Wildbad, accompanied by Herr Spoff, premier pianist to the Hospoder of Wallachia, and my little friend Mr. Eves, who knew everybody, and had traveled everywhere, always used to declare that he was at Strasbourg in the year 1830, when a certain Madame Rebecca made her appearance in the opera of the Dame Blanche, giving occasion to a furious row in the theater there. She was hissed off the stage by the audience, partly from her own incompetency, but chiefly from the ill-advised sympathy of some persons in the parquet, where the officers of the garrison had their admissions, and Eves was certain that the unfortunate debutant in question was no other than Mrs. Rawdon Crawley. She was, in fact, no better than a vagabond upon this earth. When she got her money she gambled, when as he had gambled it, she was put to shifts to live. Who knows how, or by what means she succeeded. It is said that she was once seen at St. Petersburg, but was summarily dismissed from that capital by the police, so that there cannot be any possibility of truth in the report that she was a Russian spy at Toplitz and Vienna afterwards. I have even been informed that at Paris she discovered a relation of her own, no less a person than her maternal grandmother, who was not by any means a Montmorency, but a hideous old box opener at a theater on the boulevards. The meeting between them, of which other persons, as it is hinted elsewhere, seem to have been acquainted, must have been a very affecting interview. The present historian can give no certain details regarding the event. It happened at Rome once that Mrs. Darodin's half-year salary had just been paid into the principal bankers there, and, as everybody who had a balance of above 500 scudi was invited to the balls which this prince of merchants gave during the winter, Becky had the honor of a card, and appeared at one of the Prince and Princess Polonia's splendid evening entertainments. The princess was of the family of Pompili, lineally descended from the second king of Rome, and Egeria of the House of Olympus, while the prince's grandfather, Alessandro Polonia, sold wash balls, essences, tobacco, and pocket handkerchiefs, ran errands for gentlemen, and lent money in a small way. All the great company in Rome thronged to his saloons, princes, dukes, ambassadors, artists, fiddlers, Monsignori, young bears with their leaders, every rank and condition of man. His halls blazed with light and magnificence, were resplendent with gilt frames containing pictures and dubious antiques, and the enormous gilt crown and arms of the Prince Leoner, a gold mushroom on a crimson field the color of the pocket handkerchiefs which he sold, and the silver fountain of the Pompili family shone all over the roof, doors, and panels of the house, and over the grand velvet baldaquins prepared to receive popes and emperors. So Becky, who had arrived in the diligence from Florence, and was lodged at an inn in a very modest way, got a cart for Prince Polonia's entertainment, and her maid dressed her with unusual care, and she went to this fine ball leaning on the arm of Major Loder, with whom she happened to be traveling at the time, the same man who shot Prince Ravelli at Naples the next year, and was caned by Sir John Buckskin for carrying four kings in his hat besides those which he used in playing at Eckert, and this pair went into the rooms together, and Becky saw a number of old faces which she remembered in happier days, when she was not innocent, but not found out. Major Loder knew a great number of foreigners, keen-looking whiskered men with dirty striped ribbons in their buttonholes, and a very small display of linen, but his own countrymen, it might be remarked, eschewed the major. Becky, too, knew some ladies here and there, French widows, dubious Italian countesses, whose husbands had treated them ill, for what shall we say, we who have moved among some of the finest company of Vanity Fair, of this refuse and sediment of rascals? If we play, let it be with clean cards, and not with this dirty pack. But every man who has formed one of the innumerable army of travelers has seen these marauding irregulars hanging on, like nim and pistol, to the main force, wearing the king's colors and boasting of his commission, but pillaging for themselves, and occasionally gibbeted by the roadside. Well, she was hanging on the arm of Major Loder, and they went through the rooms together, and drank a great quantity of champagne at the buffet, where the people, and especially the Major's irregular corps, struggled furiously for refreshments, of which when the pair had had enough, they pushed on until they reached the Duchess's own pink velvet saloon, at the end of the suite of apartments where the statue of the Venus is, and the great Venice-looking glasses, framed in silver, and where the princely family were entertaining their most distinguished guests at a round table at supper. It was just such a little select banquet as that, of which Becky recollected that as he had partaken at Lord Stang's, and there he sat at Polonia's table, and she saw him. The scar cut by the diamond on his white, bald, shining forehead made a burning red mark. His red whiskers were dyed of a purple hue, which made his pale face look still paler. He wore his collar and orders, his blue ribbon and garter. He was a greater prince than any there, though there was a reigning duke and a royal highness, with their princesses, and near his lordship was seated the beautiful Countess of Belladonna, Nita Glandier, whose husband, the Count Paolo della Belladonna, so well known for his brilliant entomological collections, had been long absent on a mission to the Emperor of Morocco. When Becky beheld that familiar and illustrious face, how vulgar all of a sudden, did Major Loader appear to her, and how that odious Captain Rook did smell of tobacco. In one instant she reassumed her fine ladyship and tried to look and feel as if she were in Mayfair once more. That woman looks stupid and ill-humored, she thought. I am sure she can't amuse him. No, he must be bored by her, he never was by me. 100 such touching hopes, fears, and memories palpitated in her little heart, as she looked with her brightest eyes the rouge which she wore up to her eyelids made them twinkle, towards the great nobleman. Of a star and garter knight Lord Stang used also, to put on his grandest manner, and to look and speak like a great prince, as he was. Becky admired him smiling sumptuously, easy, lofty, and stately. Ah, bon Dieu, what a pleasant companion he was, what a brilliant wit, what a rich fund of talk, what a grand manner. And as he had exchanged this for Major Loader, reeking of cigars and brandy and water, and Captain Rook with his horse jockey jokes and prize ring slang, and their like. Wonder whether he will know me, she thought. Lord Stang was talking and laughing with a great and illustrious lady at his side, when he looked up and saw Becky. She was all over in a flutter as their eyes met, and she put on the very best smile she could muster, and dropped him a little, timid, imploring curtsy. He stared aghast at her for a minute, as Macbeth might on beholding Banquo's sudden appearance at his ball supper, and remained looking at her with open mouth, when that horrid Major Loader pulled her away. Come away into the supper room, Mrs. R. was that gentleman's remark. Eeing these knobs scrubbing away has made me peckish too. Let's go and try the old governor's champagne. Becky thought the major had had a great deal too much already. The day after she went to walk on the Pincian Hill the Hyde Park of the Roman Idlers possibly in hopes to have another sight of Lord Stang. But she met another acquaintance there. It was Mr. Fish, his lordship's confidential man, who came up nodding to her rather familiarly, and putting a finger to his hat. Knew that madam was here, he said. I followed her from her hotel. I have some advice to give madam. From the Marquis of Stang? Becky asked, resuming as much of her dignity as she could muster, and not a little agitated by hope and expectation. No, said the valet. It is from me. Rome is very unwholesome. Not at this season, Monsieur Fiche, not till after Easter. I tell madame it is unwholesome now. There is always malaria for some people. That cursed marsh wine kills many at all seasons. Look, Madame Crawley, you were always bon enfant, and I have an interest in you, per old honneur. Be warned. Go away from Rome, I tell you, or you will be ill and die. Becky laughed, though in rage and fury. Hat! Assassinate poor little me? She said. How romantic! Does my lord carry bravos for couriers, and stilettos in the Fergans? Bah! I will stay, if but to plague him. I have those who will defend me, whilst I am here. It was Monsieur Fiche's turn to laugh now. Effendu, he said, and who? The major, the captain, any one of those gambling men whom madame sees, would take her life for 100 louis. We know things about Major Loader, he is no more a major than I am my lord the Marquis, which would send him to the galleys or worse. We know everything, and have friends everywhere. We know whom you saw at Paris, and what relations you found there. Yes, madame may stare, but we do. How was it that no minister on the continent would receive madame? As he has offended somebody. Who never forgives whose rage redoubled when he saw you. He was like a madman last night when he came home. Madame de Belladonna made him a scene about you, and fired off in one of her furies. Oh, it was Madame de Belladonna, was it? Becky said, relieved a little, for the information as he had just got it scared her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.